everyone. I am going to read a difficult statement that Ariel Nisenblatt from Earbuds Collective so gracefully provided about the overturning of Roe versus Wade. While Americans overwhelmingly support the right of an individual to make their own decisions about abortion, unfortunately, that right is no longer protected everywhere in the U.S. The Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade on June 24th. Abortion is a basic healthcare need for millions of Americans who can become pregnant. Everyone should have the freedom to decide what's best for themselves and their families, including when it comes to ending a pregnancy. This decision has dire consequences for individual health and safety and could have harsh repercussions for other landmark decisions. Restricting access to comprehensive reproductive care, including abortion, threatens the health and independence of all Americans. Even if you live in a state where abortion rights are upheld, access to safe medical procedures should not be determined by location, and it should not be the privilege of a small few. You can help by donating to local abortion funds. To find out where to donate for each state, visit donationsforabortions.com. That uses the number 4. If you or someone you know needs help, or if you want to get more involved, here are 5 resources. Number 1, Shout Your Abortion is a campaign to normalize abortion. Number 2, Don't Ban Equality is a campaign for companies to take a stand against abortion restrictions. Number 3, Abortion.cafe has information about where to find clinics. Number 4, PlanCpills.org provides early at-home abortion pills that can keep in your medicine cabinet. And number 5, Choice.crd.co has a collection of these resources and more, including where to volunteer or if you want to donate further. There's options on that website. So to repeat that, it's choice.crd.co. I encourage you to speak up, take care, and spread the word. Enjoy part 2 with Eric West. All right. So how different is your job on smaller shows than on larger budget shows?
Ooh, quite a bit. Yeah. Mainly because I don't think my role exists very often on smaller shows.
Sure doesn't.
That's where that team element and that accountability thing, I think that's an overarching theme for me. That's when the team needs to somehow find a way to self-assemble. And that the lead needs to give enough to allow enough resources, personnel, and time to take care of the warehouse. So you set it up in the beginning, you establish some very general things as a team, and you have to take care of it as a team. The only other choice is that a small team stays at the warehouse, but does a whole lot more than just the warehouse. Mm-hmm. You know, where they're building furniture, or they're, you know, packing trucks, or they're, you know, doing some shop related activities, but everybody's participating in a variety of activities. So you don't on paper have a designated person that's a warehouse person, but you have a team that's a little bit more of a home team. You know, that was sort of how it was in my television world. I took care of all of the stage sets, including decorating them. A lot of times I would do a real rough draft with things out of our warehouse that I knew was good to use. And I'd block it in and take some things over there, you know, audition some art, and the decorator would come by and the buyer would come by at the end, fine tune it. So that was an example of, you know, I was running in I would do the warehouse basically half the day and then stage sets the other half of the day. So on paper, I was not a warehouse manager, but I was, you know, right. So I think they're different configurations where on paper you don't, you know, the decorator lead doesn't have to submit that role as a line item in a budget, a labor budget,
but, right?
Where there is some coverage. You know, worst case scenario are those shows where the warehouse just becomes a pure dumping ground.
Oh man, we've all been on those shows. It is painful. It hurts. It physically is awful to go through, just because I feel like your brain can't find solace when you're going through your warehouse and it's just in chaos because you're like, I just need to find these three things. And your brain's like, I can't find 2 feet in front of me. So like, how am I going to find these three things?
Like, yeah, we've all experienced that, how there's almost like a tipping point for chaos.
Yeah.
To where people come in a rush, raging through boxes and throwing things everywhere and not cleaning up after themselves and a few of those rounds. And truly, it's a soup sandwich.
Yeah, 100%. We were doing the Hawkeye streaming show, and one of our lockup, it's like we're doing Christmas. We're doing a lot of the same. It's like sets are very similar. So you have buyers doing similar sets, but sometimes the warehouse would get really congested. So certain things will go to different sets, or the decorator will come and pull something from another set and bring it to another one. And so it was just like, you couldn't catch a breath. And our poor warehouse manager was like, there's just so much, like, how can I stay on top of it? We were just going so hard for so long that it was like, it was an insane, magical place, our lockup for a while.
Yeah. Well, and so I think sometimes that warehouse manager role gets really dumped on, you know, it was a little bit, as I was describing earlier about the deckers of stuff, really, I'm going to spend 6 hours offloading one decker.
Definitely.
You know, because I have 40 questions associated with this decker.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. You know, it really, I mean, I consider it to be like the gang bosses and lead man's responsibility to really kind of drive that culture and processes in everything, you know, from trucking to warehousing and how we handle things on set too, of course, you know, optimizing the decorator's time.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like sometimes our schedules are so hard on certain shows that it really does become a really magical thing to figure out. The warehouse in itself. What was one of the hardest things that you've had to figure out, speaking of which?
Well, there've been a few. Some are still covered by an NDA, actually.
Oh, really?
But one I could share would be on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We had to create a 7-foot-tall cut crystal chandelier that was an assemblage of 7 individual chandeliers that all weighed hundreds of pounds each. Ooh. And it was going to hang directly over the talent. Not that you would compromise safety depending on who it is, but it's just, it's even worse, that's, you know, cool, if it's over the talent somehow. So we had to figure out how to assemble all of these chandeliers together in a way where their own weight wouldn't shred the upper one. So you can imagine this thing is in tension, you know, so you would have this upper chandelier. If, for example, we wanted to tack weld all of the contact points to create this larger structure, then the weight of that original chandelier was certainly never designed to be, you know, I think the thing ended up weighing 1,900 pounds in the end. So, you know, that chandelier was never designed to hold that. So we had to come up with a rig that would deal with all of that, that would also allow us to move the thing, to be able to disassemble the thing as necessary to work on it, and also, you know, account for all the needs of the fixtures department. And then we had to figure out a way to transport it as well. So it wasn't just me, you know, it was just part of a group of people, but that was where, that was sort of during a time where I was definitely transitioning more into that like technical buyer role. So I was kind of involved with helping to be like a central point person on the project and also ordering all of the stuff and distributing all of the stuff and testing it and trying it and reevaluating. So.
Okay, well, 2 questions that I have to know the answer to. Number one, how did you transport it?
We had to weld up a cage that it hung from. And then, of course, we did have to remove all of the crystal pieces, which was laborious, time-consuming affair.
My God.
And box and palletize all of the crystal pieces, because otherwise they would be jumping out, breaking, or
Right.
So the shell of the thing went in a rolling metal cage.
Holy shit.
The crystals got boxed and palletized.
Okay. And then number two, how did you hang it?
A chain motor. And then we had to come up with we had to use obviously heavy duty chain and we had to come up with some kind of sock, to cover the chain right. That was not, not your normal lamp chain at all.
Right. Not in the slightest. 1,900 pounds though. That is bananas.
It was. That is
all the bananas. That's a good story. I like that one. What's the weirdest thing that you either had a part of creating or sourced things for or made?
One of my more recent challenges was I worked on Loki for Marvel. I was kind of taking over for someone else on a set. My task was to do all the shopping for a set that was taking place on another planet. It was a whole street scene, so it was all of the shop windows and vendor carts, and none of the vendor carts could have wheels, but they had to be a cart. So it was that was unfortunately on the set dressers. They had to figure out a way to make these things look like sort of Clooney walking robotic vendor carts and things like that. And I had to find things that were somehow made sense to sell at a vendor cart, but were unfamiliar yet familiar, like it made no sense. It was just one of those ones, we're in that science fiction realm where you just have to try to find a lot of cool stuff and then kludge it together in a way where it becomes less familiar.
Do you remember something specific that you used that was one of the things that you made a familiar, unfamiliar thing out of?
It was just everything from using like some kind of air tank that we had on Guardians of the Galaxy, and we were able to get those again and then use them as a fuel tank for a cooker. And we use these giant satellite dishes as some kind of wok like experience for like a food vendor. It's just an example off the top of my head, but of course we used a lot of vendor carts from one of the rental houses, and then sort of
altered them,
took the wheels off of all of them, and threw on some crazy legs or some kind of track like experience, like they were somehow robotic. So very, very strange set. It was a challenge.
Those sometimes are my favorite. I mean, sometimes they are like the most annoying thing because you're like, I have 7 million things to do. I can't think this through properly. But when you get enough time, they're really fun because you get to create this whole other version of stuff. It's really wild.
I think you kind of nailed the challenge there that, on the surface, it seems like it's a lot of fun, but the minute that you don't get the time that you would like to do it well, and you're just scrambling and everything, suddenly there's again a kind of a tipping point where everything becomes kind of overwhelming.
Absolutely. 100%. The time frame is key. If you have enough of it, super fun. If you don't, worst nightmare.
Absolutely.
Well, we kind of talked a little bit about how you work closely with the gang bosses on a job. How does your communication normally go with them?
It's really important for me to develop rapport with the gang bosses. In no way do we ever want to be at odds with each other. We have to collaborate closely.
Has that ever happened with you, Eric? I can't believe it if it has. Or you don't?
Not really. I mean, there's a little bit of personality from time to time. That's pretty common in film. But, we all generally professionals and try to remain collaborative, of course. So, but mainly with rapport, I'd even be saying, a way of communicating. That I understand kind of the style of this particular gang boss, and they understand what my needs are. And so I've gotten better over the years at expressing, overtly what my needs are from a warehousing perspective, and really ask, kind of engage them and try to get them on my team, so to speak. We'll meet regularly now that they know what I'm bringing to the table in terms of shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, a few of them in particular, take advantage of that in the best way, and we collaborate, and it frees them up to manage crew, manage the execution of all of the things that need to happen on set. So they're able to use me to try to solve some of their, some of their dress, their rigging or dressing problems, or we need to find, this or that element to fill this little bit of space, or whatever the issue might be. So they've really started to use me more and more, and I love it because I get to participate in lots of different things. And if everything goes right and all the systems are in place and everything's being executed as it should, there should be very few gaps in terms of what the decorator thinks is going to be at the set versus what is at the set.
Yep. Important.
I don't know if there was anything else about Gang Bosses.
Yeah, because normally you've already organized most of the set dressing by the set, and you're loading it and getting it loaded onto the trucks with the helps of the team. And then if there's any missing items that, they can't seem to locate, then you commandeer them from wherever they have been misplaced to.
That's right. And the Gang Bosses are good about getting with me, like I usually communicate. They're usually the ones I communicate with time frame and scheduling, what do they want to take and when.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then from there we get that together for them.
Yeah. This past show with you that we did was the first time that Gang Bosses for me were used so instrumentally for the dressing of sets and just the communication that they wanted from the buyers and from everyone. I just hadn't seen it to that level before, just because our sets were so big and it was like we would make packets and we would talk it out. And it was just really awesome to see such a collaboration between the team, because normally I talk to a Gang Boss a couple times a show and it's like very not as hands-on, I guess, would be the thing I would say. So it was kind of a different experience for me entirely, which I'm always grateful for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. In our system, the Gang Bosses are really one. And actually worked with three or four different superhero movie crews. And with most of them, I'd say the Gang Bosses are much stronger than, say, in the television world, where a Gang Boss is more just a little bit more like a punch list person, point person for the decorator to talk to.
Yeah, definitely.
To take some of the pressure off the lead man. But in our world, they're handling a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. What are some of the organizational tips, because I can talk with my mouth, that you feel are the most helpful for kit and dressing, like tape and bins, kind of like you had mentioned before to me?
That's an interesting one. I think generally we're really privileged to be able to work on these big budget movies where I can spend thousands of dollars on all the correct boxes and Gaylords and bins and folios or whatever to store this and that. That honestly, the budget is a huge thing to enable the crew to kind of get what they need. I've also worked on those shows where they have us going to liquor stores to get boxes.
Yeah, been on those too.
So generally we try to keep a kit that is organized, clean, not full of any kind of trash. And we're fortunate to be able to, like I said, buy enough supplies to do everything pretty well. We were able to spend money on the correct boxes for the correct things, so we don't have to kind of kludge some things together to keep it safe. I had responded to a thread about one of your podcasts where there was discussion of tape rolls, and I had said that I prefer to keep tape in bins because I find that tape rolls end up eating up the edges of the tape because they kind of bite into each other.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's something that's a little bit of a almost a nitpick in my world, but I don't think many people see it that way. But in my experience, I've had a lot of rolls of tape get damaged by that.
Definitely. Since you're not on set, like I know when Sean was on set with his tape roll, he just needs easy access to it super quick. So it makes more sense for him to have a roll than it would have been. But I think it's also your preference for your job. So it makes sense to store it in a bin, though, if you don't have to have constant access to it.
And there are other options. Like on my onset cart, I'll put a piece of 3-inch pipe down the core of the rolls of tape. So it's on a tape roll, but I have them where they're on, threaded onto a stick, which keeps them from biting into each other.
Yeah.
On our shows, we like to create towers of, I think we use Stanley bins, the little black and yellow flip tops for hardware. It's always a challenge. I mean, organization is always kind of an ever evolving thing.
Definitely.
But having, the proper tools to organize it and the ability to edit those things. And sometimes we end up with too much stuff and we actually just end up giving some things to the show at wrap and just turn it in with the wrap. Like, here are some fittings or whatever. We don't carry pipe fittings around from show to show or stuff like that anymore. We tend to just keep it essentials and specialty.
That makes sense.
Superhero movies, stuff that's really expensive or hard to get. We'll keep those things, but we finally reached a point where we had to start slimming it down. It was just growing and growing.
Yeah, John has a monster kit. I mean, it's a wall of bins. It's really impressive.
Literally a wall of bins. I had written down something about organization, and that was getting back to my complaint about Deckers.
Okay.
I have a real love-hate thing with Deckers.
Okay.
obviously they're a great way to move dressing around and even display them, but I prefer to use them in a temporary fashion. Sure. so that they don't get occupied for the whole show. which tends to be what happens. Not everyone views it the same way I do, but I prefer to use Deckers as a vehicle more than a shelf.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to say, because there's definitely moments where you've got projects on Deckers and they're used like as a movable table of sorts almost, and people just leave that project for weeks or months. And
that half-eaten bag of nuts.
Oh, yeah, that's notorious. Which I should probably, I don't think we've ever talked about Deckers before on the show. Maybe we have, but a Decker normally is a two-story rolling outfitted with steel case feet. And it's normally has carpet to keep things like soft and for breakable items. So if you have like, say, a bunch of glassware, you can put it on there safely and put it on the truck without it getting too damaged. I feel like I vaguely described a Decker, but I did a show where we didn't have Deckers at all, and it made my heart so sad. it's a lot easier to do our job with Deckers. They're pretty great. So,
yeah. And again, that's why we don't want to chew them up with, occupy them with
trash,
irrelevant things. Yeah.
Makes sense. What are some of the most common challenges that you face on a show?
Most common, gaps in communication.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And that comes down to sort of culture, the culture of the crew, working with a sense of accountability and empathy, the sense of being part of a team, not letting the other people down. And that's not something you always get. And this is a very large town. It's getting to be where I know a lot of people here, but I was used to working these tighter communities where the sense of team actually was a little stronger. That was my experience coming from a small town to here, particularly with one of the crews I worked with back in Wilmington. They were all military, and there was a very sort of military-like efficiency Everything.
That had
they were sharp and they had a really strong sense of accountability and helping each other out. And you didn't stop working until we were all done, that kind of thing. And so, you know, coming to a superhero movie in Atlanta with sort of the silos that occur with different gang bosses, and this crew would be done. And so they would just bolt, you know, while another team was offloading stones out of a tractor trailer or something, you know, and it was exaggerating, but it was a little bewildering to me at the time. I was like, wait, why are these guys leaving?
You know, right.
Half our crews over here busting it. You know what? So that was an interesting thing. Just a little bit of a different way of doing things than I was used to at that time. But anyway, the gaps in communication can be fixed with sort of a culture of sharing information, I think. Lack of time is always a big one. We all deal with that. Lack of space in the warehouse. That's another one. Lack of manpower especially in the smaller shows. Right.
Whew, yeah.
But luckily, you know, I'm fortunate enough to work on these good projects now. And my bosses are really good at mitigating those challenges.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like you guys just have a good system because you've all worked together for so long. So it's pretty much a well-oiled machine. You know what goes where, you know who handles what, whose weaknesses and strengths are where, and how to kind of take on the hurdles when everything happens last minute and devolves every plan that you had the entire time. You guys already have a reactionary plan in place just because you've worked together for so long. So you've got it down packed already.
That is one of the great advantages of having an established team, of course.
Yeah, I love that. I think I've hopped around to a lot of different crews, and especially in Atlanta, I'm so used to working just with two or three crews at the max because, you know, the commercial world, I'd go straight from this crew that I've worked with for 5 years that knows my personality and knows where my strengths and weaknesses were, and then go into another one that same scenario. And then I moved to Atlanta, and your decorators, since I decided to only buy really, the decorators are coming from all over the country, and you know, they're not always in Atlanta, or there some are in Atlanta, and some you do repeat shows, but sometimes the timeline doesn't work. And so you're constantly changing crews, and you might link up with a lead man, but you haven't seen the five other people that were on their crew before. And then you go 6 years without seeing them again. So it's kind of weird to constantly be learning new personalities all the time, which I just love that you guys had this well-oiled machine. We know each other. We've got it down. We know who handles what and how to handle it. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's an advantage.
Yeah. What was one of the most rewarding projects that you've worked on?
You know, I have to say all of the Marvel and big budget stuff I've done with my current crew have been great. But my most rewarding one, believe it or not, was an on-set experience I had.
Really?
Probably in 2020, maybe late in 2017, I think it was, filmed Boy Erased.
Oh, okay.
And that was a Focus Features thing. And I was the on-set dresser, and I hadn't been on set in a number of years since I had done props and television. I had been doing a lot of filling in days here and there as an on set. This was my first full on set gig, and it was super challenging. There was no special effects department. I had a crazy Spanish Catalan DP who had very different ideas about how the way things should be done.
Oh, no.
And we're friends to this day. He's a fantastic guy, but he's just very different from other DPs you'll work with that are domestic. But what was great, it was a great cast. Russell Crowe, Nicole Kidman, Joel Edgerton, Lucas Hedges, kind of an all Aussie affair. And you know, I got to work around all these great people on a small sort of more like a passion project. You know, the writer of the book and the movie was there every day, and they're making changes on the fly. Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was in it.
That's bizarre.
So it was very different from my warehouse experience, because it was got me back into the deeper sense that I'm making movies here.
Right.
Yeah. Because sometimes in the warehouse, you can get caught up in all of your processes.
Yeah. <might say. laughs> Yeah. It's so much off camera, but it's like I was saying, you're so important, Eric. We can't do it without you.
It makes it harder to not have that, for sure. And then most recently we did Suicide Squad. And that one was really fun because there was a good synergy across the whole art department.
Mm-hmm.
And I really ended up liking the finished product.
Oh,
so, awesome. Yeah. So sometimes the Marvel movies are fun too, but I really enjoyed Suicide Squad.
Yeah, it makes sense, because there's something to be said about workplace environment on films. I don't feel like it's something that ever gets brought up, and no one thinks about it, because just like everyone else, we do have offices and we do have workplace friendships, and how we communicate and the whole workplace vibe is very, it's so important to be cohesive.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the most important elements. We really are building a team.
Definitely. Do you have any tips for keeping a warehouse clean?
Yeah, I like the construction style of the better construction crews. They do it a couple times a day, or at the very least daily. You know, when I've been in the warehouse, if I'm in the weeds, I ask for help from any dressers that might be there idle. You know, I try to, when I'm working as a dresser, you know, and if I were a lead, I would really push that culture of finish your project, square up, clean up, and then come to me for another project. I found that there's a little bit of a culture of trying to do things absolutely as fast as possible so that you appear ultra adept at your job.
Mm-hmm.
But then I have seen where a lot of folks will leave messes behind in the process. Right. And it's just not my style, and not the way I was trained. So I like to clean up as I go, ideally. You know, sometimes you don't have time, and I get it. You know, for every rule, there's the opportunity to break it. But yeah, I definitely try to do it daily, or at the very least regularly.
That makes sense. And then that way you don't have to do an insane clean every day, because you're kind of constantly doing it. So you're staying on top of it.
Oh, and the very best way to keep a warehouse clean is to completely separate the shop activities. Those times where we have to share shop space with warehouse space, that's an unfortunate entanglement, because the dust is never ending, of course.
Never ending. It's impressively never ending. It's like just a ocean of dust that constantly has a wave and a tide full coming for you.
That's right.
That's a good note. I that's a smart one. I wouldn't have thought to mention that, but definitely if the shop is in a different area, or if you have some kind of wall or something between you guys, because that's, I think a lot of the times producers kind of are like, well, you guys can share the space because the shop won't take up that much space. And it's like, no, it takes up all the space because of the dust, and you can't keep your things clean. And if you're bringing in $1,000 table, you don't want it to get messed up because of all the shop stuff. Little tiny things. This is our last question, Eric. Any more tips, tricks, or tributes that you'd like to mention?
Well, I did write down a couple notes on that question. My most common tip to new dressers is to always ask for help, to never act like you know how to do something you do not actually know how to do. I've seen some pretty unfortunate examples of that. Particularly when we were doing electrical work on sets.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. I got this, you know, and it doesn't work out so well. And so, it, you know, not only is it a huge safety concern, but it's, you know, you end up looking way worse than if you had just asked a question.
Yeah.
So that's a big one. I also like to encourage the development of informal mentorship relationships. I think that's important for the growth of our community, where people who really know what's up are willing and able to share information with newer members of the team.
Yeah.
So I would say, getting back to keeping things clean, work neatly, be honest, be accountable, work hard. You know, you're part of a team. I mean, these are the things that were kind of core to my training. And I don't always exemplify those those things, but I work hard too. I like to, you know, and an extension of that is keep your kit and your workplace in general, your truck, everything, you know, kind of, yeah, I feel like you're representing yourself and your team with everything you do, and to just keep that in mind, you know?
Yeah, that was great. Those are all great things. And they make so much sense when you just break them down to teeny tiny couple of words, but essential. I feel like a lot of people that longer they're in the industry, sometimes they do forget. So it's nice to have a little refresher sometimes, even for the people who have been doing this a while.
Yeah, and it's true. I have to remind myself of things because I, you know, like anyone, I think we all get jaded with time. Ah, I don't care about that. You know?
Yeah. Let it
it's
go.
Easy to, it's an easy trap to fall into. And, absolutely. You know, I think it helps when we all think of ourselves as building a little community, you know, being a part of our own culture.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of world do you want to work in? You know?
Definitely. My big thing too is there's so many people that dislike different areas of the film industry, different locations of the film industry, and the younger generations of the film industry. But we're one industry. So you have to stop fighting each other. Like, it's not going to help you. And there's always like healthy competition. But you always want to bring people up instead of pushing them down, especially because you're one with them. So why fight each other? It's always my perspective, at least. But
I love that. And I think one, just for some reason, it made me think of one attribute that is kind of good about our profession is that it's inherently competitive. You know, yeah. There's always someone younger and hungrier than you are. And these teams are constantly turning over. So, you know, you kind of have to bring it every day. And I think that's something that helps our workforce become, you know, or remain less stagnant, or, you know, remain relevant and fresh.
Definitely. Definitely. Which is great. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for doing this. I can't thank you enough. I know it's your time off, and I know how valuable all of our time is. So I really, really very much appreciate you coming on and doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's actually been really fun. I appreciate it.
And your future in broadcasting is now born. All right. Well, thank you.
I don't know about that one, but...
Thank you guys for listening. I'm Shayna Worsham, and this is Go for Set Deck. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you guys want to check us out on Instagram, we're Go for Set Deck Podcast. If you feel like donating, we have a Patreon account, which is patreon.com/GoForSetDeck. I appreciate every single person listening, and I know I started the episode off reading a very intense and serious topic, but I just want everyone listening to know, no matter what your beliefs are and no matter what you support, you don't have to love the idea of abortion, but every single person deserves to have the freedom of choice what happens with their body. The 10-year-old that gets raped and becomes pregnant should not be forced to die because her body cannot handle a pregnancy just because she can't get an abortion. It's taking away every right that a female has to her own body. And so even if this doesn't affect you directly because you don't have the ability to get pregnant, it's the idea of respecting someone's personal choices. And everyone deserves that freedom, especially in a country that was founded on freedom. So I will say that. And thank you again for listening. This is Go for Set Deck. Be an exceptional fucking human and be pro-choice. Bye.